Okay, so we spoke on insurance. So we spoke yesterday, or 2 days ago, I apologize about yesterday, I wasn't feeling well. We spoke about our own as an OA Shalom, and a Rodev Shalom, and an OA as somebody else. Someone who cared for people, who was a lover of humanity, who was sensitive, and somehow that personality translated into successful Kirov. Because his Kirov wasn't ideological, wasn't bombastic, wasn't preaching, but he just showed people how much he cared about them. And when you show people that you trust them and you empower them and you enfranchise them as a friend, then they realize the expectations you have of them implicit in that friendship, and they rise to the challenge. It's always important to have people rise to the challenge. Some people break and patronize people and make them smaller. Sometimes you make someone larger, and you tell them you have expectations of them, they'll fulfill those expectations. Now the Mishnah starts talking about some of his tactics for resolving strife and dissent and contention. If, let's say, two people would argue, Reuven and Shimon, he'd go over to Reuven and say, "Have you seen Shimon lately? He's so sad. He's so despondent. He's mourning the fact that you guys are fighting and angry. All he wants is for you guys to make up and reconcile." Then he went to, what did I say, Shimon? Then he went to Reuven and said, "Reuven, have you heard about Shimon? Shimon is at the end of his wire. He's so gloomy. He's so disappointed." Now, first of all, it's strange that this actually worked, because after a while, you think they catch on to it and they say, "Well, why doesn't Reuven come over himself?" But evidently, in that context, it worked. But what's fascinating about this is that effectively, Aaron's lying, because presumably, Reuven was not that disappointed. He was angry. He was prideful. He was obstinate. And the same thing with Shimon. So it reminds us that for the purposes of Shalom, you're allowed to sometimes shade the truth. The Gemara talks about this in Yevamos. Mutar l'shanos adam ifnei shalom. You're allowed to change the truth. Who knows the two times in Sefer Bereishis that the truth was altered in order to create shalom? Anyone know? Sarah? When Sarah hears about this message and this information, she's going to have a child. She starts laughing and mocking. "My husband, he's so old, he'll never be able to have a child." And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reports this to Avram, he doesn't share with Avram that Sarah mocked Avram. He presents it to Avram as if Sarah were doubting herself. "Oh, Sarah, your wife is just laughing about her ability to have a child," because he didn't want Avram to realize that Sarah was scoffing at Avram. And what else? Yaakov, Yosef, and his brothers. When Yaakov dies, Yosef approaches the brothers in Parshas Vayechi and says, "Avicha tziva leimor, your father, our father, before he died, commanded on his deathbed that we should reconcile," when it really never happened. Now, it's important because on the one hand, you're allowed to tell a white lie in order to create peace and harmony. On the other hand, you have to be careful because lying is very addictive and you can become a chronic liar. And today's white lie becomes tomorrow's malicious lie. And today's slight alteration of the truth, which is justified, becomes tomorrow's outright lie, which really isn't justified. Be really, really careful about it's a sliding slope. And you can very quickly slide into this very dark place where you become a chronic liar and you forget what it is to tell the truth to other people, and ultimately forget what it is to tell the truth about yourself. It's very important, or to yourself. There's a great American educator who once said, very interesting phrase, we lie loudest when we lie to ourselves. Our loudest lie and our worst lie is when we deceive ourselves. If you get into that habit that you're constantly telling lies, then your whole world becomes this very, very obscure cloud and ambiguity of truth and falsehood. And you have a very difficult time detecting realities and truth about yourself. But at least in Aaron's case, the Mishnah is justifying it. Now, when Aaron dies, the people mourn him for 30 days. When Moshe dies, they only mourn him for 7 days. The Mishnah says that's the reason. Because Aaron was very popular. Aaron was very beloved. Aaron had been responsible for so much reconciliation and so much rebuilding and rehabilitation of relationships, not just between people, but within the context of a marriage. He was a marriage counselor. In fact, there were a lot of children named Aaron. because people, when they reconciled and rebuilt their marriages, they were so grateful to Aaron that they named their child Aaron. Just because it's the week of Rav Aaron's Yahrzeit, there were a lot of little children of Gush alumni around the world who were being named Aaron, or other formulations of Aaron. So people would name their child after Aaron. And what's interesting is that when we think of naming our children, we think of naming our children after relatives. But there are a lot of people who get so connected to their Rebbes, well, certainly in the Lubavitcher world, Hasidic world, but even in our world, that have started to name their children after a Rebbe of theirs who unfortunately passed away, and they feel so connected. So people would name their children Aaron after Aaron HaKohen, which highlights the tragedy of Moshe Rabbeinu, but also the heroism of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's always easier to be a popular leader. Moshe didn't want to be popular. Moshe wanted to be effective. And to be effective, and he played off of Aaron, and they had the luxury of being a tandem. And Aaron was the soft-spoken, easygoing, embracing, friendly, tolerant. Moshe was in your face. Moshe challenged people to higher ground. Moshe chided people. Moshe castigated people. He blew the whistle on people. It's always easier to be a popular leader than to be a challenging leader. But people really need both. And my advice to you in life is to find both. Find people who will embrace you and affirm you and validate you and reinforce and support you and empower you. But you have to have someone in your life that's willing. It's not very easy because you don't end up being popular. It's always easy just to be a little bit set back and to let you think that people who are willing to get in your face and blow the whistle and challenge you and say, you're doing something incorrect, you have to improve, you have to clean up this part of your life, they're not looking to be popular, and they're willing to pay the price of their popularity in order to be an effective leader. So there's a bit of a tragedy that when Moshe dies, he's only mourned for 7 days, whereas Aaron's mourned for 30 days, but it shows the heroism and the pure sincerity of Moshe. He wasn't interested in winning a popularity contest. He was interested in being an effective leader. And today there's been a shift a little bit in leaders and rebbeim and teachers that are always looking to the people who are warm and charismatic and popular and do they like me, do my talmidim. That may be a sellout or a cop-out. And obviously a leader who doesn't have the luxury of working alongside an Aaron HaKohen, so he has to be a little bit of both. He has to know the times to be affirming and to validate people and to support whom they are. On the other hand, you need people, or a leader has to know when he has to cross that line and sacrifice and forfeit popularity for the sake of challenging people to higher ground. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit tomorrow about another reason, or Thursday, tomorrow's Hasidus, another reason that Aaron was mourned for 30 days. And this is a very interesting contrast between Moshe's death and Aaron's death. Have a good day, everyone. Have a good day.